The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual hosts and their guests do not necessarily express those of KCNR Radio and its sponsors. All shows are independently owned and broadcast for entertainment purposes only. Readers and listeners are advised that neither KCNR Radio nor its owners and agents shall be held liable for the content of this program.
Good morning, Sovereign Minds.
Woo-woo!
So today is going to be a little bit different. We have Mark and Linda Kent, who are both out on assignment today, and it's just me and Bob Holsinger, who is here as my co-host today, and he is also running for a position of county clerk, and he has some very interesting information for us. But this is going to be a jam-packed show. So we have Bob Holsinger is going to be telling us about this information that he has right now. But at the end of the show, for the last hour, we have both of the Tehama County Sheriff candidates that are running who are going to be coming in here and telling us what their job is and what they're planning on doing. And we're going to be having them on for the last hour of the show. And Bob is going to tie over to that as well. Because, as we know, he's been a huge part of our community and a huge part of ensuring our elections in this past election. And with that said, Bob, tell us what we have.
Yeah, good morning, everyone. Bob Holsinger, running for Shasta County Clerk, and that's a very important position because that also has overseeing our elections. And I think we all want to have fair, honest, transparent elections. For the last five elections, I've been involved as a citizen observer. It's a volunteer position. I was a coordinator for the last four, where I'm actually recruiting volunteers and training them in election code and actually scheduling to observe ballot voting in the polls and processing downtown. So it's very interesting.
That's awesome. Now, in this last election, we saw that they didn't want to seal the doors. They didn't want to stop counting. And they had actually tried to prevent that. And now there's some other documentation that we were just talking about to where they're circumventing California law?
Well, there's some interesting things that seem to happen. Of course, some things are interpretation, but I can read. I've been reading for a number of years. And some of that sealing of the doors was interesting because I was reading yesterday. I was going through the election law again in preparations for my candidacy, and I found that when there's ballots in a door and inside a room and they're unattended, the doors shall be sealed. And there was a big discussion about that when we were finishing up the count for the recall of District 2 about putting some tamper-resistant tape on the doors. They didn't want to do that.
And I can't for my life fathom why you wouldn't want to do that. That keeps both sides out, right?
That's my that would be my understanding as well. They had electronic door locks on them. Well, yeah, but people have cards for those, card readers.
Mm-hmm.
Certain people do. Not everyone, but probably three people, maybe four of the office. But still, why not put a tape on it?
Well, and even then, those door locks can be circumvented by anybody. I mean, I'm somebody that likes to watch these DEFCON things and
understood.
Otherwise. And, I mean, anybody who has one of these cheap $30 machines can get in any of these things just by running the codes. And so, I mean, yeah, it sounds high-tech, but it's really not. I could do it in probably about 20 minutes.
With the right equipment and the knowledge, you could do it. You can overcome the electronics.
With the right equipment and the right knowledge, I've seen guys do it in 10
sealed,
seconds.
A sealed piece of tape, you know, with a signature on it,
mm-hmm.
and it's still there in the morning, chances are pretty good that the door wasn't open, right?
Right.
But if it's broken in the morning, that's another issue.
Mm-hmm.
But those are the kind of things. Why would you not want to guard to the best of your ability the election process?
Mm-hmm.
And that's a challenge.
So tell me, what caused you to run? What was the key moment where you just said, yeah, I need to throw my hat into this?
One of the things I do is I've been involved in several from the state of Jefferson long ago. I've been in Shasta County a little over 5 years now. And I got involved almost within the month within the state of Jefferson. I was invited to come to a state of Jefferson. I was in a tea party in Fresno County when I was still employed down there and working before I retired. And came up here and got involved in the state of Jefferson, and it was like, oh, yeah, we need to separate from California. We don't have any representation. So that really got me going. Well, that's fine. I met a lot of folks, became one of two people that were helping write the Constitution for the state of Jefferson from Shasta County. We were part of a committee. That also got me more exposure. Then coming here in town, been going around to a lot of civic organizations, and we went to a leadership program that taught us as a citizens, the only way we're going to take our government back and control our government is start at the local level and work our way up to the top.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that started us. It was a foundation for applied conservative learning. I think it was called FACL on the acronym. So it was an 8-hour class, and we did that. And it worked out. Wow, we got to go to the Board of Supervisors meeting. So started going to the Board of Supervisors meeting for the last 2 years, and the things we saw, and then COVID hit, and it's like there was never a budget issue in there that they didn't want to pass.
Mm-hmm.
And so $20 million or something like that, and they passed with a 3-2 vote with no discussion before the citizens, we the people.
Well, this is what we're seeing right now, and what we're seeing is that our county is underwater with all of the amount of money that we just have shelling out constantly, the businesses that are leaving and the people that are leaving. And I mean, we are in dire straits here, be it the water, be it the money, be it anything else that's going on right now. I mean, the water, you're looking 2 years out to get a well drilled. Last year, people already ended up dropping their wells down further, and they don't have any more room to drop them down. Look at the rain that we got this year. And in 2019, our reservoirs were completely full.
Right.
We had all the reservoirs up here completely full. Right. The lowest was the Oroville Dam because of the damage that was done to it. That was 127%. 100% is 5 years of water. All right, I'm no mathematician, but from 2019 to 2022, that's not 5 years.
No.
And yet we decided to dump close to about 93% of our water into the ocean to save the Delta smelt and 1,000 salmon.
And we probably flushed them all in the ocean anyway, and they've died in salt water.
Exactly.
But it doesn't make sense at all. Now we've got ranchers and farmers that are in dire needs, and we're not too far behind it as citizens of the cities and the communities of Shasta County.
Well, and you look at what's coming up right now. We have the President of the United States finally talking about the famine that is going to be coming. We get 40% of our fertilizer from Russia. We get 40% of our wheat from Russia and Ukraine.
Right.
We get 30% of our corn from Russia. We don't anymore. But guess what? That's gone. You look at California. California produces about 30% of the agricultural food for the rest of the country.
Correct.
We are the largest importer of food out of any other country. And they're talking over in Germany right now how food prices are going to spike 25 to 50% in just a week or two. And we're seeing this across the board. And, I mean, we have our own president now saying that there is famine that is coming. And, yeah, if you cut off 50% of the food supply and we only throw away about 10% of our food, what happens? Well, it's not just this magical thing to where the stores just magically get stocked.
So I'm assuming he's out there pointing his finger. You just need to be aware, pointing a finger at you and I as citizens, this is coming. But I always tell everybody in my work groups and my teams, I got three fingers pointing back at who? Oh, me? When I point fingers at someone, I got three fingers pointing back to me. Who's to blame for what's happening in the country and in the world now?
Mm-hmm.
When you turn around and kill the energy system companies and want to bankrupt the oil industries, what do you expect? Because everything has an energy component in it, whether it's farming, it's ranching, it's any industry out here has you transport back and forth. The trucks are hauling equipment. Railroads, it's everything is tied to energy, and solar is not going to do it.
It's not. And you've got the CEO of BlackRock coming out and saying that we're going to see $200 per barrel gas and oil. And right now we're at about $103, and gas over here is about $6 everywhere you look.
Yeah.
If it goes to $200, you're looking at $12 to $15 a gallon gas, and we're already seeing about 30% of the truck drivers, they're estimating, who are owner-operators, who have these breakdowns, they can't get their trucks fixed because there aren't parts.
Right.
Now their fuel bills are insane and egregious, and 30% of them are going bankrupt. All right, well, when we have 30% less truck drivers in the private sector, what does that do for being able to get goods in addition to all of this?
Correct.
I mean, this is a nightmare and a half, and it seems like every single thing that they're doing is making it worse. So we have this bird flu that's over on the East Coast right now. 13 million chickens have already had to be put down, and that was 2 days ago's information. So we're probably up to more than that. We also now have these food shortages all around, but yet California thinks it's a great idea to say, hey, there's going to be no new expansions on slaughterhouses and no new slaughterhouses, period. All right, well, what does that do to all of the existing slaughterhouses? If you're a business and you can't grow, what happens to your business?
You go belly up, right?
Exactly.
You just can't proceed. You can't do business in this county or this state.
And so at this point in time, when we have these massive food shortages looming, that's the time when these people decide we're going to make it significantly worse and significantly harder and make it to where you can't get food on the shelves. And then down the line, they're going to say, oh, it's not us, it's Russia's fault. Oh, it's not us, it's China's fault. Look at what they're doing. And this is just what we're seeing across the board. They're blaming Russia and China for things when it's already spiking before Russia and China had anything to do with it. And every step of the way, what they've done has made things worse. Like right now, I'm looking at investments and what might actually be something that can withstand the test of time here. And the scary thing is I don't see anything. The housing market is looking like it's getting ready to go bubble up.
Yeah.
We see that gold and silver are still heavily, heavily manipulated. Why is it that in all this time we see inflation of everything else with the exception of gold and silver? Why are they staying stagnant or even going down? That doesn't make any sense.
Right. I totally understand that, too. Yeah. We always used to think that precious metals was our safety net. Mm-hmm. But is it really? Especially with the government wanting to go to an electronic security device now to tell us how much money we have in our account and what we get paid in digital numbers now, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And that's scary. I know how much money I have in my account when I have it in my wallet or in my house, but I have no idea when it's on my bank account because it can be gone in a heartbeat.
When you look at what they did to Canada's truckers,
yes,
and how they ended up confiscating their bank accounts and freezing their accounts, freezing their assets, and even freezing their families' assets.
Just overnight.
Completely shutting them down. That is exactly what they're talking about doing here. So it was last week, there was 140 nations that came together, and it was for the New World Order Summit. Wow. A little bit too on the nose this time.
Does that scare you? It should.
And they were discussing about how America is at the forefront of developing this cryptocurrency and that we're going to need to develop a new bill of rights for your crypto persona. And we also have these groups from, I think it was Acceptance or something like that, but this group is developing this thing called ID 2020. And it is a digital identification that they want everybody to have. And it also ties into the ESG scores that you already have. I mean, people don't understand it. Unless you're banking with a just like a community bank, you already have an ESG score. They're already tracking and saying, all right, you drive a gas vehicle, you're going to get dinged on that. You use propane at your home. You don't have solar, you're going to get dinged on that. And the end game on this is their private-public partnership to make it to where you're not going to get a business loan. You're not going to be able to get a loan for a vehicle. You're not going to be able to keep your home because your insurance company, like BlackRock said, they're not even going to work with anybody who uses these gas products or work with any companies that do. All right, well, when you have the largest investment firm in the world, I mean, third in GDP only to the United States and China, the next is BlackRock, and they say we're not going to work with any companies that work with anybody that does anything with fuel.
Wow.
And is not green. All right, so what happens when your insurance company says, I can't insure your house because you don't have solar on it. I can't insure your house because you're driving a gas vehicle. All right, now you lose your insurance, you lose your home. That's the way we get to you own nothing by 2030 and you like it. But the only way we prevent that is to have people like you step into these positions that ensure our elections. Because there's not a whole lot of faith in our system right now when it comes to elections of any kind. I mean, this Dominion software and all the big fiasco that went around and about that and how much cover-up between everything that's going on, the Hunter Biden scandal, the fact that we have Mark Zuckerberg in violation of our election laws
right.
and dumping this money in all over the place, it's insanity right now what we're seeing.
And on top of that, he's all, what is he doing? Oh, he's censoring the free flow of information.
Mm-hmm.
And so you only get what he wants us to see in addition to his $400 million investment in our elections?
Well, and we generally don't have any free media anymore. I mean, it's very few and far between. Even Truth Social was a bust. It was a bust from day one. Even Trump's not on it. And there's a lot of these things that we're seeing right now to where you have alternate media applications that are growing and people need to utilize them, but it's not the network that these other places have yet.
No, they don't have the input, they don't have the output, the ability to relate to the citizens that are hungry for good, truthful information. And so that's a really challenging thing. My whole thing with running for the clerk, when I went to these civic groups, I kept saying, will you run, will you run, will you run? I retired after 44 years. I've done my time. And I kept hearing that, would you run? You're the only person that has more knowledge than, you know, knowledge of election codes and what's going on in Shasta County other than what's in the office now.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure if that's true or not, but I do have a significant amount of election code that I've worked with and observed and have people trained now with it. And so I looked at it, and I go to some place and says, when are you going to announce? So now it's not, will you run? It's like, when are you going to announce? And I was right in the middle of the District 2 recall. And I had people in the field, and I was coordinating, and I was doing my job part in the field. And it's like, I got to finish this. I can't walk off and go on a campaign now in the middle of this. So we waited till we were done there, and then I kept hearing this. Okay, when are you going to run? When are you going to announce? So I finally said, okay, fine. I'm praying about it. I was waiting about it. I didn't want to do it, but it seemed like I was told to go try it, get it done. So we went ahead and stepped into the arena. And so I'm probably 6 weeks, maybe 8 weeks behind. I'm still putting out signs. But I go around to meet and greets and around the Shasta County. I'm reaching out to the outlying areas. I believe that Bernie, Shingletown, Shasta Lake, MacArthur, Fall River, those are outlying counties that every one of the citizens there have a right to become knowledgeable about who's running for the elected officials.
Mm-hmm.
So we're starting to have meet and greets in the outlying areas. Myself and some other candidates are going around, and we're trying to bring our message to the outlying areas. And I think that's something that's been abandoned for too long.
Well, and this is my point on it. I don't want to see people who are running who are just in it for a position. I don't want to see people who are wanting to put themselves in there for power or for a power trip. I don't want to see them getting themselves in there because they have great aspirations of being a political figure. And this is my problem with most of these candidates all across the country, is that's what they're doing. That's the whole reason. That's the sole reason. And you can see it based upon their actions. When Kathy Darling was in here, one of the things that she ended up saying that really struck me wrong is that she wasn't for the voter ID because the people back in Sacramento were never going to let it happen. And so she didn't have any say on it whatsoever. She's not going to be for it.
So don't push back? Yes, you push back. You say, no, this isn't right.
Exactly. And this is the thing. If you're not going to say anything for it, we need somebody that actually will. Because right now what we're seeing is we have mail-out ballots that are going out to everybody. We are a first world that is operating in third world conditions. Even Mexico has a voter ID.
Right.
Let that sink in. Mexico has a voter ID.
Mm-hmm. But we can't.
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense at all. It really does not. And I know, I can tell you from knowledge, the only voter ID I have when I walk into the precinct poll to vote is they ask me for my address. I give my address. The second clerk to the right says, what's your name? And you give them their name, and they look you up on the roster. Between address and name, must be you.
Yeah.
So at that point, your ID is assumed or assured.
Do you even have a picture that pops up of the person when you're seeing them?
No idea. And I walk into some of the polls. I walked into one in the Newsom recall. Just walked in and introduced myself, who I was and what organization I was with and why I was there. Just going to hang out and observe for a while. And I'm there. I wasn't there 15 minutes, and Joe walks in, and he walks up to the counter, and some says, hi, Joe, how you doing? Are you still at? And they gave him his address. And obviously, you're still Joe Smith, right? Mm-hmm. So they were friends. I didn't know at the time, but this is the poll worker asking that. So I said, okay, when everybody left the poll, I asked the inspector, I said, let me ask a question. How are you supposed to greet a voter as they come in the poll to verify their ID? Well, he says, well, I can't ask for an ID. I understand that. He says, but normally what we have to do is we have to ask them their physical street address, and they'll repeat it back to us. We'll say, okay. And then the next clerk will ask them their name, their full name, as per the registration. Oh, okay. And I said, that's my understanding, too. I says, but that last voter that came in, that didn't happen. And the poll worker, like, it did, too? Oh. And she stopped in mid-sentence, says, oh, my goodness, I didn't even realize. But mm-hmm. she had done that. And it was done innocently. But that's the problem. If I had to show my voter ID, all questions are over. Mm-hmm. I've got a photo ID. I've got my signature, and it's issued by the state of California. Done. And everybody has voter ID. I don't care if it's your EBT card or whatever it is. Try to buy a beer at night or go to, you know, when you're 19 or 20 years old. You know, you want something, an alcoholic son. I don't know if it's 20. It's 20 now. 18 is you can, I don't know.
21 for
is
alcohol.
Is it still 21 for alcohol? Okay, so if you look like you're 25 or something, and they're going to ask you for an ID. But I'm too old to know the ages anymore. My granddaughters are about 40 years old, too.
When you look at these things, they're all backwards when it comes to these things. So right now we have all of this debacle and this fiasco that's going on with our border and these people coming in, and they're getting bussed and flown all around. And we have actually towns now that are having more illegal immigrants that are being dropped off in these towns and in these cities at locations all across the country. And the population of these people is more than even who is there.
Right.
In the cities. And so it's completely destroying these communities. There's not enough food on the shelves. There's not enough infrastructure. And they're just doing this to make the problem go away. They don't want to send it to any of the big cities that have the infrastructure, because even then there will still be hardships.
Right.
But this is what we're seeing that's going on. And at the same time as all these people are hopping on these flights and being told to go on these planes, you and I still have to have the little golden bear of the verified real ID to be able to hop onto any of these flights.
Yes.
Unless you or I are an illegal alien. What's the point? Are we forgetting the fact that the people that actually came across the border and did 9/11 were not from this country? Are we forgetting the fact that they were immigrants who were welcomed here into our country on their own and then decided to do those crimes? But yet you and I have to go through all of these rules to ensure the fact that we're not going to be a problem on these planes when we didn't cause it in the first place. It's like it's the same idea behind taking the guns away from good citizens because criminals use them.
Right. We've seen this with the immigrants that's coming across the borders now. What has California got in place? And I'm not sure if it's federal. I believe it is a federal law now. It's motor voter laws. So any citizen, when they get a driver's license, which now in California, undocumented aliens can get driver's licenses, mm-hmm. just go to the DMV, and then the default right away is to register them for voting unless they check the box that says not a citizen of the United States.
And then, aside from that, the default is to mail them out a ballot that they then can come back. You look at these things that are going on. No other country has ballot boxes that sit there unattended to where everybody goes and drops their ballots off.
And our current clerk implemented those in 2011, 2012, and she was interviewed here recently in March about that on a nationwide interview with an organization she's a part of. They were celebrating Women in History Month, and she was proud that she brought drop boxes to Shasta County. I'm sorry, I wouldn't be proud of that personally. I want to see the voting in person.
Well, and that was one of my things. I didn't want to drop my ballot off in a ballot box because that was, we've seen this in other places across the country to where, all right, yeah, people go into these areas to where there's ballot boxes and they know that these areas vote in a particular way, so they firebomb the ballot boxes.
Right.
And your ballots are gone. And this is just one of the things that we're ending up seeing. We have the 2,000 mules information that's coming out. But across the board, what we're seeing right now is a weakness, both within our government and a corruption that's there as well. So it does look like we have to take a quick break. You've been listening to KCNR, 96.5 FM, 1460 AM, Your Talk Radio. The number to call in if you guys would like to is 605-4567 with a 530 at the start of that. Thank you.
Now is a great time to prepare for this year's upcoming wildfire season. Rain Electric Utility and City of Reading staff are busy clearing vegetation to mitigate wildfire risk to our facilities and to the community. You can also prepare by trimming back shrubs and tree branches that are closer than 5 feet from your home, clear debris from your roof and gutters, and clear dead vegetation on your property. For information about tree trimming and proximity of power lines, call 530-224-4356. We all need to work together to prevent wildfires in our community.
What is happening in the state of Jefferson? To find out, listen to the Jefferson State of Mind program Sunday mornings at 9 a.m. on KCNR with your hosts Wayne Carpenter and Terry Raposa. To catch up on past broadcasts or to listen anytime, go to KCNR1460.com and click on the archives link.
ACA, come out and play. Have you seen the bill we all have to pay? The time has come for 51 in a Jefferson State of Mind.
Hi, this is Senior Chief Rob Burrows with the Northern California Veterans Museum and Heritage Center, and I am your host every Saturday morning from 9 to 11 with Battlefield Expressions. Battlefield Expressions is where we talk about veterans issues, advocacy for our community, and those in our community who help support our veterans. Once again, join me every Saturday morning from 9 to 11, Battlefield Expressions on KCNR 96.5 and 1460 AM.
Are you new to crypto? It can leave you feeling unsure of what to do. Help is available. From getting started to securing your cryptos, you don't need to go it alone. Bitcoin 530 will take you by the hand to help you move forward with your crypto journey. Schedule a free consultation with Bitcoin 530 at bitcoin530.io or give them a call at 530-324-5175. That's bitcoin530.io.
Again, you're listening to KCNR Sovereign Minds. This is David Johnson with Bob Holsinger, who is running for county clerk. Now, over the break here, we were just talking about these systems, these ballot boxes, and what we can do here in our county. And there was some interesting information based upon the actual laws that are here. One of the questions that I've had for a long time, ever since 2020, was why is it we always knew that same day who was going to win? We already had it called. Every other time in my life growing up, that was the case. But now all of a sudden we have weeks and weeks of counting, and we still don't have answers in a lot of these elections. So you had said some interesting things there, and I'd just like you to go into it a little bit based upon your research.
Well, I spent a lot of time on California election code, obviously, with different things and preparing for elections. I've got a primary election coming up on June 7th, and I've had to step down from Election Integrity Project California, but I'm still preparing for my candidacy, obviously. I'm a candidate, so I want to make sure I'm knowledgeable. So I'm always going through codes, and I just got a letter sent to me last week inviting me to come attend a observer seminar at the Board of Supervisors meeting next week, or this coming week. And at that meeting, they're going to allow or tell the observers what they can observe, how they can observe, what they can do, and what they cannot do. Okay. That's in the Voter Bill of Rights, and the Voter Bill of Rights is Section 2300 of the Voting Code. And it's pretty clear in there what I can do and what I can't do. I can observe. Every citizen in California has the legal right to observe the polls, the voting in the polls, and the ballot processing. We're all voters in California.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yes, we do, but we also have the right to ask questions in California because there's another law in there. It's called 15104 in the California Election Code, and it says we have the right to observe and ask questions of the supervisors without disturbing the process of processing the ballots and get an answer. Well, this document has in there, you're going to send your questions to an email address and then wait for them to respond back to you. Well, that, again, is not what the code tells me.
Mm-hmm.
It says I can ask the supervisor and expect an answer.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't say in 2 or 3 weeks. So that's the kind of stuff that I look at. I want an office in there that is open, is transparent, and is by the code.
Well, and the importance of that is what we saw over in places like Pennsylvania,
right,
where they ended up taking blackboards and chalkboards and putting them in front of the windows,
yeah,
and kicking out the poll watchers.
Mm-hmm.
There was no questions to be asked there. They just kicked them out. It's in a legal process. And what we're seeing right here is there is a document on the Federalist that came out recently. And what it's called is Explosive Pennsylvania Testimony Explains How Leftist Money Infiltrated Election Offices in 2020. And the importance of getting in front of these things and seeing these things for what they are. Mark Zuckerberg and Priscilla Chan's private foundation infused $350 million in cash into the elections process.
Yeah.
Can you imagine how much sway that much money can do?
Oh, yeah.
How many businesses make $1 million a year in a lot of these areas?
Right.
I mean, imagine our area here. And you have these big corporate founders like Zuckerberg who have been thieves since the beginning. I mean, stealing Facebook from the people that worked on it from the beginning.
Yeah.
I mean, and they're out there stealing elections now? Is it surprising anybody?
Well, in my position, I can't say anyone's stealing or fraud, and I won't say that. But I'm just trying to educate people on their voting rights. And one of them I'm talking about just now says on the Voter Bill of Rights, it's Section 2300 of the California Election Code, says you have the right to ask questions of the precinct board and election officials regarding election procedures and receive an answer or be directed to the appropriate official for an answer. If you disturb the process, that's one thing. But if you're asking just a simple question, you need to get an answer.
Mm-hmm.
But then I look at the document here and it tells me, oh, you got to send a questionnaire to this email address and then we'll get back to you. That's not an answer.
No. And when are they going to get back to you? After it's already too late to say anything.
It's too late to remedy the problem that you observed.
Yeah.
And that's the challenge. And that's why transparency and openness and fair elections are so critical to Shasta County and to the entire nation.
And so this was a contract as well that they wanted you to sign saying that you would send in,
yes,
your questions,
well,
via email.
This is the document right here with the signature line in the bottom. I refused to do this. I called her and told her about that. I said, I respectfully refuse to sign this document. And she goes, well, why? I says, well, I believe it circumvents the California Election Code. And I says, she says, well, what do you mean? I says, well, I believe that it's not based on election law, and I refuse to do that. She goes, well, I says, what was the basis for this document legally? And she said, well, I'll have to get back to you. If I wrote something legally and shoved it out to observers, I would not know to be able to defend it. And I was just really, number one, I was disappointed. I've had a good relationship with the Election Bureau and with the clerk, and I was just shocked what was I seeing. But when that came out, now this same document.
Can I see that?
Yeah. It went to, she says it went to all the observers. I said, okay. Well, I found out it didn't go to all the observers. I don't know how it could go to all the observers because we, the people, are the citizen observers. It could have gone to everyone. But I really think that we need to do some more citizen voter outreach from the election office and do a better job of publicizing. When you walk into the poll and you got your vote by mail envelope and ballot with you because you want to vote in person, they typically don't offer you the opportunity to vote in person. They say, oh, you can just drop it here in this sack over here and it'll go in tonight and be counted. Well, it will, but not that night, not election night. It'll be counted the next 14 days after the election. They don't tell people that. And it'll be counted by 8 to 14 people, depending on ballot condition. 8 to 14 people will touch your ballot that you don't know.
Well, and this is an interesting thing for me, too, because my wife signs everything the exact same way. That's always been the way it is. When she submitted her ballot, I saw her sign it. I saw the exact same signature as I always see. Well, right about a month after the election,
here comes a letter.
Here comes a letter saying
they disavowed her signature on her ballot.
Yeah, we need you to re-register and re-verify because your signatures don't match. Well, I've been with the woman 9 years. I know her signature
pretty well.
I know
how
she signs it.
Yeah,
there's nothing different. The only thing that's different is, in 2020, she registered as a Republican and voted for Trump. And I don't think that they liked a Hispanic doing that.
Uh-huh.
And I said, that's a change. No, we're going to disallow that. Probably not based upon signature.
Yeah.
Probably based upon the fact that she changed from seeing exactly what's going on in our country. She didn't vote for Trump the first time. In fact, we've had long conversations about these things.
Right.
And you know what? That's unacceptable.
I agree with that. The challenge we run into as California citizens here is California legislature and governor have signed a law that says the signature verification is the only way on these vote-by-mail ballots that they can verify who you are. And it's gone from 5 unique caricatures of your signatures down to 1 signature character. So if I'm right-handed and I make my mark with a slope to the right, I guess that's 1 signature verification caricature that matches my signature, so I guess that's okay. And it also says, always look at your signature verification with the understanding that it is the person that signed the ballot. We're assuming that it is the correct person. We're supposed to always err on the side of the voter when we're doing signature verifications. And it, literally, they'll look at 4 signatures. So they'll have your voter registration on top, and on the bottom, there will be the signature that was actually taken off of your return envelope when you mail it in. It's scanned on electronically, and it's matched up with a barcode to the signature on your registration card. And so when they're doing signature verifications, they'll show up on a computer screen. And literally, there's typically less than 10 seconds to approve 4 signatures at a time.
Wow.
It's just that fast. Just like,
well,
and I got to be honest. I got to be very honest with that. A lot of times, 10 seconds is acceptable. Other times, you're going to dissect that. I would dissect that, and it may take me 30 seconds, maybe a minute or more, depending upon. Because you're looking at where people pick their pen or off the paper and then write it again. Some people do, or whether it's cross the T or dot the I. Myself, I've got to where I don't even lift the pen. I just cross the T.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's my signature, then that's what I'm going to use tomorrow and today and next week.
Well, and so much of this, too. We have signature verification programs that the FBI's had for decades now.
Not improved in California at this time. Not electronic signature verifications.
And why?
State law. They have not got confidence in the software, allegedly. Now, I don't want to go there, but they don't have confidence in the software for electronic signature verification. That's kind of a strange.
And yet that same software can be used to convict people in a court of law?
That I don't know about. So, yeah, if that's what happens, it's able, if it's legal to do, I guess that's...
Because they'll go through and use that software to be able to say, hey, this signature didn't match up, and that's how you did this check fraud. And they'll present that as evidence.
Well, right now, Secretary of State has not approved, I believe they have not approved signature verification software for California yet.
And this makes no sense. I mean, when you go through, you look at it, my understanding of the voting system is getting worse and worse, like from just looking at all of the insanity that's going on.
Well, another thing, let's talk about that again a little bit more. So voters' signature verification is one of the things that we can observe. And you'll see in there, I believe it talks about COVID protocols must be observed. And that's 6 foot away.
How are you going to observe
that? Well, I'm
6 foot
from you, and I've got four signatures on a little computer screen, and I'm trying to do a diagnosis within 4 to 10 seconds, whether I agree or not. It's very difficult, but I got to stay at COVID distances. But I don't now, fortunately, at this point. But it may be springing up again. But I need to get close enough where I can actually see the signatures and see how they formed their letters, that sort of thing.
That's incredible. All right, so we do have to go to a quick break. You've been listening to KCNR 96.5 FM, 1460 AM. The number to call in is 605-4567. And see you guys on the other side. Listening to KCNR, Sovereign Minds. This is David Johnson with Bob Holsinger, who he is running for county clerk. And now, Bob, I wanted to get to the questions of why are you running? And what are the changes that you're going to make if you're elected? What are the problems that you see? What can you legally address? How do we fix our system here?
One of the things I'm as I go down the campaign trail, I'm constantly looking at different election codes and different issues surface, talking to the constituents out in the field. We do meet and greets, and I'm seeing a lot of things, and I'm telling the same story over and over again. I was raised by a second lieutenant in the United States Army from World War II, very stern, very of my way or the highway. And if something was told to him that I did X, Y, Z, and I said, oh, no, I didn't do that, he will always tell me where there's smoke, there's fire. And so I'm going, what's that mean? So I learned real quickly what that meant. Usually it was go get the razor strap and bring it back and I'll take care of the problem. But I learned that real quick that deceit was not something I wanted to do. So I don't know if there's a problem with Dominion voting machines. I know there's allegations of that all across this great nation about Dominion and Dominion and Dominion and Dominion. I've never heard personally of another brand of voting machines, electronic scanning voting machines, that's been drug out like that particular brand. Mm-hmm. We happen to have Dominion voting machines and software on lease in Shasta County right now, and we've had that since 2017. And if you listen to Kathy, she'll tell you that they've been working with the predecessor of Dominion, who is now part of Dominion Corporation that has the machines, and they've had a long-term relation with since them for since 1960s. So I don't care. But my whole thing is the allegations of problems with the software and with the hardware itself, is it really worth it to the citizen voters of Shasta County? And it's not to me. I looked at the contract. The contract was issued in 2017. And the contract's got an escape clause in it. It basically says you can have us come get our equipment for any reason or give us a reason, either one. There is no cost to get out of it. I don't have to pay a penalty for early withdrawal. And I can just pick up the phone and say, with Board of Supervisor approval, I want to talk to my board, obviously. So I'll talk to the Board of Supervisors to get approval of that, and we'll just call them up and say, hey, you know, I would like you to come pick up your equipment on XYZ date. And I don't have to give you an answer. That is the – they have software and a Canon scanners. They call them tabulators, and they actually tabulate the ballots. They can do 100 ballots in about 20 seconds, front and back sides of scanning them and photographing them. That's the workhorse of the voting, you know, system in Shasta County, because they'll put, you know, 80,000 ballots through those tabulators and maybe 7,000 or 8,000 at the polls at times, probably more than that, but depending on the election. But they're very, very – they're inside this room that we were talking – I think we were doing offline. We were talking about tamper tape on the doors. They got electronic key cards that go in and out of this room. Great. Appreciate that. And only certain people have access. Appreciate that too. But tamper tape, where you actually sign across the tape and put it on the door, and it should not be broken in the morning when you go in the door the next time or go to go in the door, it should still be intact. That tells me no one opened the door.
Mm-hmm.
And it just makes sense to me. But these are machines are all in there, as well as the duplicating machines where all the duplication of ballots. If I put my pen on there and make a little, I was doing this, just rested it on there, and now there's a little mark there on the ballot that I, that's no big deal. These scanning machines are so sensitive, they'll pick up a ballpoint pen mark on a ballot and kick it out.
Wow.
And that means it's, somebody that I don't know, two people are going to go over there at that table over there, and they're going to decide what I voted, how I voted, because they're going to duplicate what is on my machine onto a brand new ballot, print it out, and then that's going to become my ballot, and my other ballot will be soiled and disposed of eventually.
Wow. So there was some truth about the 2020 and having people that were just doing quick marking pen marks on the top of ballots and those being kicked out after.
This is a challenge that I run into all the time. We were all given Sharpie ballot marking devices when we go to in-person voting, and we wanted to go vote in the voting booth.
Mm-hmm.
They'll hand you a Sharpie pen. And everybody in Maricopa County started bringing this to light. Yes, Sharpie pens are an immediate marker, and yes, depending on the actual ballot paper used in the different elections, and in Shasta County they do this, it will bleed through the paper. Okay. I want you to understand something with that. That's not the end of the world,
mm-hmm.
The bleeding through the paper, because in my career in power plants, as management in power plants for all these years, you have to know spreadsheets and how spreadsheets work. There are columns and there are rows. And these machines are programmed just to read a specific column on that ballot. And then it reads a specific rows as well. It's a database is all it is, basically. And when it does that, it's reading maybe column B only. If it's a two-sided ballot and you flip the ballot over, the column of A or B in on your front ballot now becomes over here where column L would be on the right-hand margin instead of on the left-hand margin. So if it bled through on the right-hand side, you're not looking at that row anywhere, or that column anyway, because it just went from here to here, right,
mm-hmm.
as you flip the ballot. So now I'm looking back over on the left-hand side of the margin, reading the ballot markings on that. And so, yes, it bleeds through. Is it the end of the world? No. What's the worst thing that happens to us, or one of the other things that really happens with these electronic scanners, is a lot of us like to use gel pens,
mm-hmm.
because they write really nice and stuff like that. But you ever put a gel pen and an ink pen side together
smudges.
And do this?
Yep, smudges bad.
It smudges bad, and when that goes in, it gets on the optical glass of the scanning machine, and after probably 100 to 150 of these ballots going through that, I've got to shut the whole machine down, turn it off, open it all up, and then clean the glass on both sides of it before I can continue with my voting. That's a real problem.
Wow.
So gel pens, no. Black or blue ink pen, yes. Sharpies, ideal for what we're doing, because it immediately just hits there and goes right through the paper, and it works out. But when you flip the ballot over, or if you're just doing column B, and over here it's maybe column F, on the second column, of the second contest, on the second side of the paper, it's not a problem. You flip it over, and those move to the right side, and you're only counting on the left.
Yeah.
It's really, really easy to do. I understand, but I don't want to be a party to fraud like that, or trying to educate people is really important. And, again, when you look at your vote-by-mail ballot that everybody gets, The recommendation is every ballot issued to a voter in this county will be counted by Dominion software.
And if you get elected, will that change?
It is my intention to have that changed as soon as possible.
Perfect. Because everybody that I've talked to in this county wants it gone.
There's no reason to have it out here because all it does, it's like a thorn in the tiger's foot or something. Every time you take a step and you want to go to the voting poll and that's reminding you, oh, Dominion, Dominion, Dominion. There's other options.
Mm-hmm.
So my intention is to go out and shop those options. I have a list of them. It's on the Secretary of State's webpage. Anyone can see it. But I want to shop the options. I want to find out, give me some references.
Mm-hmm.
I want to look at the references online before I even call the references. What's their history? What's their background? Where'd they come from? You know, these are typically county clerks. And I want to find out who they are, just like I would be a county clerk at the same time. And then I would start asking them questions about these machines. Why do you like these machines? Have you had any issues with these machines? What kind of interactions do you have with the vendors? You know, how do you program? All that sort of things. I want to find out how do they stack up with Dominion, and are they a good fit? And then how much can you support us within X date timeline? You know, elections are finite. It happens on this date, and this has to happen.
Okay, and we do have a caller. We have Dar on the line.
Can good morning, Dar.
Dar, your radio is pretty loud in the background, and you are on air.
Hello, just a minute. I got to turn the radio down. Hello?
Hello, hi.
Hello, Dar.
This is Bob Holsinger. Hi. How are you?
All right, I've been listening to you. It has to do with ballots and elections. I haven't caught everything, but I had something happen. I'm concerned about it. I had the Charlene from the voters registration call me about my registration, and I've been registered here since 2006. And she said that my registration was, there was a problem with it. And I said, what's the problem? And she said, you can't use a post office box. And I said, I didn't register with a post office box. And I've been voting every year. And they had, me and all my information. And they had me at a post office box in Cottonwood. And I live on Silver Ridge Road in Palisadro.
Uh-huh.
And I'd like to know, that to me was very suspicious.
Well, something happened there, that's for sure. Had you been to the DMV office at all during that period, before that period?
I renewed over the internet my license about a year and a half ago.
Before this event, right?
Yes, this happened just about a couple weeks ago.
Okay, and that was before they told you that you now had a post office box and you could not register to a post office box, which is absolutely correct. I need a physical address, which is your physical street.
I've been voting since 2006 with my address here in Palisadro.
I understand. When you did the online registration, is it possible? Do you get your mail through a post office box?
No.
Certainly not in Cottonwood from Palisadro. That doesn't make any sense at all, does it?
No.
So that would be very – so do you have computer access?
I have to go to my granddaughter.
Okay, understood. So, understood. But, you're not different than a lot – you're no different than a lot of active voters, and I appreciate that. There's a application on computers. You can go to Shasta County Elections Department, and you can go in there and says, look up my voter status. There's just a little button you push, and then you input your physical street address in there, and it pulls up who you are, what district you're in, how you're registered, and the whole shot right in front of you. And that would be very interesting to know. Now, also, in your case, do you get downtown in Reading much at all? Is it possible you could go to the election office?
Yeah, I could. I don't go down that often.
I understand. You're out on the east side of town, as am I. But I you know... That's something that can and needs to be looked at as soon as possible.
All right. We have reached the top of the hour, and they're going to be cutting us off. You're listening to KCNR, 1460 AM, 96.5 FM. We are going to have Bob hang over and go ahead and join us for this next portion of the hour with the two sheriffs that are on as well. You've been listening to Sovereign Minds.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.
News this hour from townhall.com. I'm Michael Harrington. Former President Trump spoke to another big rally last night, this one in North Carolina. He says Republicans must win in November, and if they do.
In addition, a Republican Congress must stand up for parental rights and parental choice. I think that's a good idea. No teacher should ever be allowed to teach far-left gender theories to our children without parental consent. It's truly child abuse. Plain and simple.
Mr. Trump also teased another run for president in 2024. Ukrainian forces are digging in, and Russia's military is lining up more firepower ahead of an expected showdown in eastern Ukraine. Experts say a full-scale Russian offensive could begin within days and could become the decisive period in this war. However, questions remain about the ability of Russia's depleted and demoralized forces to wage any successful campaign after the failure at Kiev. Maryland lawmakers have overridden Governor Larry Hogan's veto of a measure to expand access to abortion in the state.
The state will end a restriction that only physicians can provide abortions. Maryland Right to Life has said that it is one of the few health and safety precautions for pregnant women in Maryland. The law, however, will enable nurse practitioners, nurse midwives, and physician assistants to provide them. It also requires most insurance plans to cover abortions without cost.
Correspondent Ken Lorman. Holy Week is underway on this Palm Sunday. Millions of Christians all around the world marking Christ's triumphant arrival in Jerusalem in the run-up to his crucifixion and resurrection. Monday, Thursday will mark the Last Supper. Good Friday comes after that, and a week from today, Easter Sunday. More on these stories at townhall.com.
This story is called The Ugly Truth About Timeshares. If you think you've done your family a favor by buying a timeshare, well, you need my help. Hello, I'm Chuck McDowell, founder and CEO of Wesley Financial Group. 10 years ago, I started helping folks cancel their timeshare. In the process started what's now called the timeshare cancellation industry. Timeshare is the only thing that you can buy that you can't tell me how much it's going to cost or when it's going to end. When you buy a timeshare, you give them a blank check to fill out any amount they want for annual maintenance and assessment fees. Sounds crazy, right? Well, the crazy thing is, this never ends. Stop the insanity today. Call my office now. I guarantee if we can't cancel your timeshare, you'll pay nothing.
Were you lied to when buying a timeshare and want out? Get the facts about timeshare cancellation. Call Wesley now for your free information kit. 800-691-9999. 800-691-9999. 800-691-9999.
Air traffic controllers' protests are causing problems in Warsaw.
Air travel authorities in Poland are warning travelers of possible flight delays and cancellations at Warsaw's airport due to a protest, and as one in five flight controllers are quitting their jobs. The protest is a reaction to changes in the functioning of Poland's flight regulatory body amid allegations it was not properly ensuring airspace security. The controllers are also criticizing the new salary system. The number of arrivals and departures were delayed by an average of 30 minutes Saturday at Warsaw's Frederick Chopin Airport. Rhonda Rockster reporting.
Australia's Prime Minister has called for a May 21st election that will be fought on issues including Chinese economic coercion and the COVID-19 pandemic. Prime Minister Scott Morrison today advised Governor General Dudley Hurley as representative Australia's head of state, Queen Elizabeth, that he should set the election date. News and analysis at townhall.com. Officials in Jordan say the king is traveling to Germany for surgery on his spine.
King Abdullah II will have surgery to treat a herniated disc at a hospital in Frankfurt, Germany next week. Doctors advised him to receive the surgery as the pain increased recently. The Royal Hashemite Court says the king will then return home after a recovery period of 1 week. The 60-year-old monarch suffers from intermittent spine pain.
Correspondent Andrew Stewart. Today is Sunday, April the 10th, and some notable people are celebrating a birthday, including actor Steven Seagal. He is 70 years old. Actor Peter McNichol is 68. Olympic gold medal speed skater Kathy Turner has 60 candles on her cake. R&B singer Kenny Lattimore, 55 years old. Actor and comedian Orlando Jones is 54. And Haley Joel Osment, the actor we always thought of so young, well, he's 34 now. More on these stories at townhall.com.
The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual hosts and their guests do not necessarily express those of KCNR Radio and its sponsors. All shows are independently owned and broadcast for entertainment purposes only. Readers and listeners are advised that neither KCNR Radio nor its owners and agents shall be held liable for the content of this program.
Morning, Sovereign Minds. All right, we are back after that hour break. And we are still in here with Bob Holsinger. He's going to be tying over for the next hour as well as my co-host. And we have Chad Parker, who is a candidate for Tehama County Sheriff now. I ended up meeting both Chad and David Keene yesterday, and we were just in passing at the car show there. And I've had an opening there towards the last hour, and I wanted to get their input. So here's what I have for all of you guys out there. All of our Reading listeners, I want you to make sure you share this and go online and share it from there or share any of the other feeds to all of your Red Bluff friends and all your Tehama County friends. Now, Bob Holsinger, I also wanted to get the word out for you and say, what do you need, your campaign, where can we find you at? Give us any more information that you want.
Okay. Real quick, if you go to any web, you got a web browser out there, if you put the vote Bob, and that's pretty simple, forward or backwards is spelled the same. Last name is Holsinger, that's H is in hotel, O is in Oscar, L is in Lima, S is in Sam, I is in Indio, and it goes to N is in November, G is in Golf, E is in Echo, and R is in Romeo, so it's Holsinger. So I'm a hole, and I'm a singer, yeah, without the E on the end of the hole. But if you go to that votebobholsinger.com, put it in your browser, it'll pop up the webpage, and there's all kinds of information in there for election integrity and trying to make Shasta County transparent, free and fair elections, and educate the voters.
Okay, and what else do you need? Do you need people to post signs for you? Do you have a place that they can get those from you? Do you need donations? What do you need?
You can contact me at bobholsinger35 or bobholsinger35 at gmail.com, and I can get a sign to you and answer any questions. And, geez, here it goes. 530-680-0862 is my phone number. If you want to talk to me direct, you're welcome to.
Good deal.
Okay.
All right. Now, Chad, thank you for coming in. And I've got the same questions that I plan to ask you, I plan to ask David. That way it's just completely transparent and fair both ways, and people can make up their own minds on it. So the first one that I have for you is, what caused you to run for office, and what was the motivating factor?
What caused me to run for office was I didn't like the cuts of service that were happening in Tehama County. As citizens, we all deserve the same protections that we expect. Now, a sheriff doesn't have to provide all of the protections, patrol, and such under the California Constitution that we all like and expect to have. The sheriff is only required to maintain a jail, be a bailiff in the Superior Court, and serve civil papers. However, through time, the sheriff has duties expanded to protection of the people, protecting the citizens from government overreach, protection of the Constitution. These are important items that we don't see very much in Tehama County. Cutting services to the public is detrimental to the county. We have issues where people are no longer reporting crimes to the sheriff's office because they either aren't getting a response or they're told to fill out a form. Mm-hmm. And that form gets entered into the computer system, and you may or may not have someone call you back.
So what you're saying is the rural residents are more inclined to call 811 than 911.
Yes. you know, I mean, when you hear about things that happen when you're out with the community, you hear about people shooting back and forth at each other, or shooting somebody went to stop a theft of gasoline from their ranch, and one of the ranch workers shot a gun up in the air to scare the people away. Those people shot back. Don't know if they shot in the air, shot towards the direction of the shot, but this is an example of one thing that was never reported to the sheriff's office because they don't figure they're going to get a response.
Mm-hmm. So as far as services, what do you mean when you say the services are being cut? What are some examples?
So originally, the sheriff's office closed our dispatch center from 10 p.m. to 6 a.m. because they lost staffing. And I understand staffing leaves. They leave for sometimes different jobs. They retire. However, my opponent was told by several staff members, hey, you're going to come into a staff shortage here in dispatch. We need to figure something else out because you're looking at several people leaving. Mm-hmm. And there was no planning. There was no forethought into if these people left.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sad that there's no pre-planning when it comes to operating the sheriff's office. Currently, the front office at the sheriff's office, first they closed on Fridays because they needed to catch up on their work. Which, yeah, there's three ladies at work or run the front office, and they needed to catch up on all the work that they had coming in. So I can understand, you know, they're behind. They're going to close to the public on Friday just to keep up.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now they've switched it to they're open from 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. Monday through Thursday. From 2 p.m. to approximately 5 p.m., they lock the doors and they catch up on their work that they've got for the day that if they haven't been able to get it done. And then Friday, no one works.
Mm-hmm.
So they're cutting hours to the public. If you have a normal 8-to-5 job and you need to conduct business in the sheriff's office, you either have to take time off work or not conduct business.
Mm-hmm.
And that is truly a tragedy because a lot of people work 8-to-5. How are you going to come in and do business, do whatever you need to do there, to report a crime, speak to somebody. And if it's after the stated hours, you pick up a phone and you call the dispatch center. That doesn't help when you're trying to conduct business.
Mm-hmm. So what are some of your solutions to these problems? And also, what is your background, history, and qualifications?
So let me address the first one.
Okay.
My solutions are that we need to recruit people, and we need to recruit people more than just off of the county website for personnel and off a Facebook post. We need to go out into the community, and we can't hire anybody over the age of 18. So why are we not going to the high schools at this time of year, saying, hey, we have a job opening. Who would like to come work for a law enforcement agency and work in our front office? That is a stepping stone if they have goals to be in law enforcement. It's a stepping stone for them to get into the department and for them to move forward in the department.
Mm-hmm.
We don't go to job fairs. we don't put ourselves out there for recruitment. We expect the recruits to come to us. Well, that's, you can't survive today doing that. There's just no way. So those are some of the things that I want to do. Recruitment all around. We need to be proactive and going out and getting folks to come work for us. It's just not a matter of waiting for people to come to us.
Okay.
So the second part of your question. I'm a fifth generation Tama County resident, born and raised there. My family came there in the late 1800s. For the most part, my family has stayed in the community. I have a few relatives that have migrated out of Tama County. I started with the sheriff's office at 16 as a volunteer in our Explorer program. At 19, I was a part-time deputy, reserve deputy. At 21, I went to the police academy, I went to the police academy, partly sponsored by the sheriff's office. Was hired when I was 21. I worked in the jail. I worked in patrol. I've been a resident deputy, boating deputy. Worked in the courts. Worked in the civil when they needed help serving papers. I was on a narcotics task force. I became a detective at the sheriff's office. I was a detective from 2011 to when I left my full-time employment with the sheriff's office in 2018. And when I left my full-time employment, I went back as a reserve extra hire deputy. I currently work full-time for the state of California. I'm a supervising investigator for the Bureau of Livestock Identification, which is the brand department. I also, originally when I left to the state, I was just an investigator for the brand department, and I covered the whole entire state by myself, mm-hmm. With cooperation with local county sheriff's offices and brand inspectors for cases. After an animal disease outbreak in Southern California, they created a new position where we merged the animal health investigations and livestock identification investigations into one office. I was promoted to the supervisor, which I started the unit from ground zero. I had to make up a realistic budget for what it was going to take to run my unit, hire and train investigators, provide training, create policies and procedures. So I started this unit from the ground up, and the unit covers the entire state.
Wow. Okay, so I want to move to the Second Amendment because we have about 12 minutes, 13 minutes left. And as you can see, we have a big Second Amendment flag here on the wall, and we're Second Amendment territory completely up here. So I have a couple of quick questions. So the Supreme Court defined bearing arms in the District of Columbia versus Heller, adopting a definition Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg had previously provided. The court determined that the neutral meaning of bear arms is to wear or carry upon the person in the clothing or in a pocket for that purpose. However, at that same time, she also ended up saying that when you had the ability to concealed carry, then you didn't have a, or when you had the ability to open carry, concealed carry is not a policy of an amendment that's there. It's where you can utilize that that way. So the thing about it is the right having to open carry being the main way in which she suggested it there, would you issue open carry permits for people?
That's a really tough question, only because California law does allow for open carry. The sheriff can issue an open carry permit for any county that has a citizen census below 200,000. Prior to issuing any open carry permits, one, I'd want to consult with the two other law enforcement jurisdictions in the county, both police departments, City of Corning and City of Repla, and to make sure that we're all on the same page and under the same understanding. Because you also have to look at, in law enforcement, you have a duty to protect people. You have a duty to educate people. If you do not educate your citizens about open carry, and let's say they're in a situation where there is a mass shooting somewhere, and they pull their gun, and they are protecting themselves, which is, I totally understand, and that's their right to do so. However, when law enforcement shows up on the scene, what is law enforcement going to zero in on?
Gun.
On the gun. And they're going to see that as the threat. And they're going to lock in on that citizen who is just protecting himself and may end up hurting or killing that citizen because the citizen may be firing to protect himself or herself, but all the law enforcement sees is they're responding to a mass shooting and the citizen is armed and firing, and they're going to neutralize what they believe is a threat. And how can you expect a law enforcement officer in their split second decision, how are they going to feel when they realize that they may have injured or hurt somebody or killed somebody that was just trying to protect themselves? Mm-hmm. So there needs to be, before just a blanket open, hey, yeah, you can have an open carry permit, there needs to be a lot of education out there first. I'm a proponent of education. I'm a proponent of the Second Amendment. We all have the right to bear arms. If that is what you choose to do, you know, who am I to tell you you can't do it? Mm-hmm. I believe in issuing CCW permits. I'm hesitant on open carry permits only because you have a difference between somebody who may not be expecting a firearm to be present, and the law enforcement officer may react to that threat, because that's what we're trained to react to, is that threat of a firearm. If we walk up on a car on a traffic stop, the first thing that if you have two people or you see a weapon in the car, you're reacting to that threat. Mm-hmm. And you're going to take your gun out and you're going to point it at somebody and you're going to pull that person out of the car to remove them from the threat. And yes, it may turn out well this time, but what happens next time to somebody else, or they believe that person's reaching for that firearm? That is where education is paramount first before even considering open carry permits.
Okay. And now it looks like we do have a caller on the line. We have Terry. Good morning, Terry.
Good morning. I have a question, actually a couple of them. One is that it sounds to me like you're for the Second Amendment. You believe in the right of the Second Amendment, but you won't allow open carry. I don't think allow and right belong in the same sentence. I guess the other question I would have is, how do the other 45 states deal with open carry? 35 of which people can go and buy a gun, strap it on their hip, walk out the door after they do a brief background check. Isn't that a training issue? And a lot of times when people who use a weapon, isn't it more about discerning when you use it, not where you carry it? So to me, it's very confusing that we're putting the training issue of officers above the right of the people. That's a training issue. Up until 2012, we had open carry in California. And as far as the law goes, basically, in Article 3, Section 1 of the California Constitution, which you talked about before, it states that the state of California recognizes the United States Constitution as the supreme law of the land, and California is an inseparable part of that, which means if there's anything in the compact the states made to create the federal government, which we call the Constitution, if in fact anything conflicts with that, it's not lawful. So I'm trying to figure out how you can be for a right, and why is the Second Amendment the only right we have to ask permission for in California?
Well, I don't see it as you have to ask for the right of the Second Amendment. That's a guarantee.
Well, to get to carry a weapon, you have to have a CCW. That means the sheriff has the can, may issue, not shall. It's a may issue in the state of California. So, no, you don't have, if you can't open carry and you need to get a permission slip to carry and concealed, then how do you possibly have a right, which is why we have these Second Amendment cases going on right now. But again, it's the type of thing where you're discussing the Second Amendment, but you're talking about a training issue. I mean, how do the thousands and thousands of peace officers in the other states cope with open carry in the circumstance you just talked about? That's a training issue. That has nothing to do with a right.
Well, you're absolutely right, and that's why I said there needs to be an education proponent or portion of this before that we discuss even issuing open carry in Tama County, because it's not just an education of the public, it's an education to the officers as well. Because in California, in the post academies, you're trained to deal with the threat of any type of firearm, any type of weapon, any type of situation that your life is in, you feel that your life or someone else's life is in danger. And I'm not just saying that it's a Tama County issue, it's a statewide issue. That's what they train law enforcement with. It's a matter of education and training. You're absolutely correct. But would you want to
I understand that. I get that part of it. The point is that if you put a stoplight in somewhere, don't you train for a month? I mean, really and truly, the educational process could be something to where you could have a three-month time period to go ahead and educate your officers and educate the public at the same time, and then allow for open carry. But again, allowing a right, it's, again, the Second Amendment's the only right we have to ask permission for. And there's no other way around or other way of saying it in the state of California. It just is. And it's illegal. And basically, I think we're all looking for sheriffs who want to be constitutional carry states or counties to create that with the state, as Ohio just did, Indiana just did, Alabama just did. And so you're right about the education. If you're talking about the education of your officers, you're right. But that should start immediately. And if they're not teaching that in the academy, then there's something really wrong with our academies.
Well, when I went through the academy, I went through in 1995, that wasn't taught. And I pretty much, I can't tell you 100%, but I'm pretty sure that that's not covered in the academies.
Well, I'm sure it isn't. That's the whole point that it should be. But anyway, thank you very much for your answers.
Thanks for the call, Terry. All right, so we have about 2 minutes left here, and I want to give you the opportunity to get your name out there again. It's Chad Parker for Sheriff. Where can they find you? What do you need?
So you can find me on Facebook at Chad. I believe it is For Sheriff. Let me check. It is F-O-R for Sheriff. My website is www.chad4sheriff.com. My email address is chad4sheriff@gmail.com. And my best way to contact me is 530-567-6478. If people would like to have signs, like to donate, reach out to me on any of those ways, by phone, text, email, and we'll either get you a sign or meet you to accept a donation.
Perfect. All right. And once again, you guys have been listening to KCNR, 1460 AM, 96.5 FM. The number to call in is 605-4567. Mm-hmm.
Join Aaron Ryan and Bill Cundiff for We the People Radio every Sunday from noon until 2. Our expert guests will give you the whole story rather than a bunch of sound bites. Our commercial-free archives are always available at wethepeopleradio.us.
Sponsored in part by Pape Machinery, located at 3119 Twinview Boulevard, for all your local John Deere Ag and Turf products. Join us every Sunday from noon until 2, wethepeopleradio.us.
What shall we do about them?
What is happening in the state of Jefferson? To find out, listen to the Jefferson State of Mind program Sunday mornings at 9 a.m. on KCNR with your hosts Wynn Carpenter and Terry Raposa. To catch up on past broadcasts or to listen anytime, go to KCNR1460.com and click on the archives link.
ACA, come out and play. Have you seen the bill? We all have to pay. Time has come for 51 in a Jefferson state of mind.
Alan Gordon, Coachmaster Collision. Although Coachmaster is recognized as the authority and specialist in frame and suspension, we are primarily your auto body and truck collision repair center. This includes all vehicles, Lexus, Honda, or pickup trucks. Our technicians are highly trained and have the most advanced equipment to ensure a complete and quality repair. With our knowledge and the insurance claim process, all we need is your claim number to handle your claim. Coachmaster has a great working relationship with all insurance companies. This ensures a complete repair with quality parts and a delay-free process. At Coachmaster, in our 50 years in business, we've experienced almost every situation imaginable in a claim. This experience and personal dedication to the repair of your vehicle sets Coachmaster apart from all other choices. And yes, if we can't fix it, no one can.
Learn more online at CoachmasterAutobody.com.
Good morning, Sovereign Minds. You're listening to KCNR 96.5, 1460 AM. Now, we just ended up having an interview with one of the potential sheriff's candidates for the Tehama County sheriff's election. And we now have the other candidate, David Kane, who is here in the studio with us. And we also have a caller, Mark Baird, and we have Bob Holsinger, who is running for county clerk currently as my co-host. So with that said, good morning, Mark. Let's go ahead and hear your question or comment.
Well, I would like to ask the candidate what his position is on open carry in California, and then if I may, I may have a follow-up question if that's okay and you guys have time.
Absolutely. And so just to let you know, this is the second candidate. The first candidate just ended up leaving a moment ago. I'm having both candidates on and letting them share their thoughts. So sure, with that said, would you like to answer the question?
Yeah, I'm happy to answer the question. So open carry in California under the state guidelines and Tehama County works very well for us. Any county under 200,000 people, it's at the discretion of the sheriff for that county as to whether you can open carry or not within the guidelines and the confines of the law. And as we spoke yesterday, my intent is to allow us to follow the law. The law is there. It allows for that to be decided by the sheriff. And when I'm sheriff, since it's within the confines of the law that open carry is allowable in our size county, then that is a law that I intend to follow.
Okay. And, Mark, did you have a follow-up question?
I do, actually, yeah. That, he's referring to Penal Code 26150B2 and 155B2, and that is jurisdictions with less than 200,000. The sheriff may issue open carry permits, but there's a problem in California, and that's why I'm suing the state of California. The Department of Justice refuses to issue those applications, even though the legislature has instructed them as codified in 150 and 155B2. So I'm suing the state of California over that very thing, And in addition to that, because there are geographic restrictions, in other words, you can only apply in your county of residence, there are population restraints, so you can only apply in a jurisdiction that has less than 200,000 people, and your permit, your permission slip, is only good for the county in which it's issued, which ostensibly would be your county of residence. You'd have to sprout wings to fly over the areas that would send you to jail for the very thing that this sheriff proposes issuing a permit for. And by the way, I'm not against that. I'm a former peace officer, and I commend you for that stance. No other sheriff in California has ever issued one. And so what we hope to do is strike those sections of the penal code and strike 25850 as well, which is the outright ban on the open carry of a loaded weapon, and have constitutional carry. And should that happen, and the case is looking pretty good, by the way, how will you handle the training issues that are presented by that? And the previous caller was right, in my opinion, and I was a cop. It's just a training issue, and have you got kind of a rough plan? In other words, what we are hoping is that sheriffs such as yourself will become part of the solution instead of remaining part of the problem. And
yeah.
How would you propose to get trained up, get your guys trained up, so that they don't have a panic attack every time they see a pistol? Because it was legal for 250 years up until 2012.
No, I totally agree with that. In fact, there's one other element that you didn't talk about, which I'm sure you're familiar with. In some municipalities, the concealed weapon permit is issued by the chief, which is another layer of
yes.
issue or concern here, that the sheriff has the discretion in a county jurisdiction, but then, like you already pointed out, you go into a city jurisdiction and their position may be different. So I appreciate that position.
The 26150 is the sheriff, and the 155 permits are police chief.
Right. So you could hypothetically have different opinions between a sheriff, an elected a sheriff for the people, and an appointed city police chief, and I recognize that. I think that this is something we're already seeing, not necessarily on the open carry side, but we're already providing training to our law enforcement officers in the county jurisdiction, and it's more so for the fact of not having that knee-jerk reaction when someone is rightfully carrying a firearm pursuant to the Second Amendment, transporting it legally, and or if they already have a CCW, and making sure that our officers are gauged with the idea that there are people out there that are lawfully carrying firearms and should not be treated as if they're committing an illegal act just because they have a firearm. I think that in our jurisdiction, we see more and more, and I can tell you I've made a number of stops where people have told me I have a gun in the car, and I've asked them if they have a CCW or where it's at, and after they've told me, then if they're going to get a citation or if they're going to get a warning or whatever we're going to do, we just carry on with business. It doesn't necessarily mean we got to pull them out of the vehicle and prone them out on the ground or take their gun. And most law-abiding citizens know that they're carrying legally, and it is a training issue. And I do agree. I heard a little bit earlier, I do agree that this is a training issue that should start in the academy, and I will promote that with any academies that we're using here locally in the North State, as well as this is a training issue that can be addressed in our field training program. I've been a field trainer. I've been a supervisor of our field training program, and as law enforcement evolves, we need to evolve with it, so we need to provide the proper training as we go along to the changes in the laws and things that would benefit our citizens as a whole.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And I'd also like to add that, as like I said, as a former peace officer, and I'm still involved in a limited way, but what we want to help people understand is we're not asking 58 sheriffs to carry all the water. What we're asking is for the people of the state of California to help you carry the water. And we want to present solutions to you so that not only you have an easier time doing what it is we're asking you to do, but it turns out okay, because what we all want is a successful outcome, and that outcome has to be that a right is not a permission and a permission is not a right, and there are ways to mitigate those training issues in the early stages. In other words, let's make the bite less bitter for the street officers while you're doing your training. And by the way, the Level 1 Academy at College of the Siskiyous would probably be real fertile ground for those types of training ideas, because I happen to know the guys that are in charge of that, and they want that kind of information, I think. So, and we have a lot of suggestions for sheriffs who are open to them to make it easier for them to become constitutional in their practices and their thinking, and I just want to thank you for your stance, and good luck to you.
You're welcome. Thank you. Good question.
Thank you for the call, Mark. All right. So I am trying to remain as neutral as possible with this and giving the same questions to each of the candidates.
I appreciate it.
And so the first question that I had is, what caused you to run for office, and what's your motivating factor?
Yeah, so the first thing that caused me to run is the sheriff called me into his office and told me that he's retiring at the end of this term. He's a very well-respected sheriff in Tehama County. He's finishing his third term and probably one of the best bosses I've ever worked for. At the end of that conversation, when he told me he was retiring, he told me that I should run. I should seek the office that he's going to leave, and he told me that I had his support. That was really what kind of started the whole ball rolling. But then I've talked to members of the community. I've talked to people that I work with. I've talked to local politicians, all of which have been very supportive of me running for sheriff. I think over my 26-year career that has spanned between the Corning Police Department and the Tehama County Sheriff's Office, so all of it in Tehama County, I have shown dedication and commitment to our community in Tehama. And with him leaving, I believe that out of the two of us, me and my competitor, I'm the most qualified with my experience to provide the stability and continuity to the office in these troublesome times with staffing and things that are on the horizon, to promote us forward, to move the sheriff's office and evolve us in a proper way into technology and advance the sheriff's office. As most people know, if you stand your ground, you fall behind. We need to evolve and move forward, and that's what I intend on doing with the sheriff's office. And so the support of everyone, as well as the law enforcement community that has come out to support me in this endeavor, has really been the motivating factor of why I wanted to do it. I started my career in Tehama County, and I intend on finishing my career in Tehama County.
Perfect. So the next question that I had based upon that is, what are your qualifications for the position, and what is a little bit of your history?
Well, I'm going to try to make it as short as I can because there's quite a bit, actually. But I spent 12 years in the city of Corning as a police officer. During that time frame, I worked at the Drug Task Force for two tours. I had a canine partner. His name was Gunner. Best partner I ever had. He was the only one that never talked back to me. And then I was also a field training officer. I was an officer in charge at that location. I was a gang investigator. I ran the gang task force for a couple of years. And then I decided that the small city of Corning, I had kind of outgrown it. So I put in for the sheriff's office as a patrol sergeant and went over to the sheriff's office. I was a patrol supervisor, the DUI supervisor, proud recipient twice of the Mothers Against Drunk Driver Award for DUI arrests, both one in Corning, one with the sheriff's office. I've been on the SWAT team for 20 years combined between the city of Corning and the county sheriff's office. Every element of that team, from team member up through assistant team leader, tactical commander. I ran the drug task force for my third tour as a supervisor at the sheriff's office. I took over our major crimes division and ran both the narcotic task force and our investigative group. And then in 2018, I promoted to captain at the sheriff's office and third in command, which is the same position I hold today. I was the commander of the jail for about 5 years. That in itself is a challenging environment. And from there in 2018, I was made the division's commander. So I run all the divisions, the jail, the operations, and the administration division. I oversee all of them, and each one has its own lieutenant that runs it. But on top of that, I have a bachelor's degree in criminal justice that I earned while I was working. I've been on a myriad of boards, California Association of Tactical Officers, California Narcotics Officers Association, California Peace Officers Association. I've been on the sheriff's budget team for the last 3 years, helping maintain our budget and be fiscally responsible for the sheriff's office for at least the last 3 years. I've been on the countywide budget team. I probably could go on and on, but
I think that's good for now. All right. So based upon your experience and what you see for our community, what do we need and what are the changes that you're going to implement if you become sheriff.
Yeah, I'm excited about that. The biggest need that we have, I think everybody can recognize, and this is not just a sheriff's office problem, it's a countywide problem, county jurisdiction to county jurisdiction, but it's staffing. It's trying to find the right people. The more people we have, if we're full staff, the more services that we can provide to the public, the more specialized events that we can provide to the public and working certain problem-oriented policing areas that are having some specific issues. We can branch out to some of our rural areas. So my first goal, and I'm on record for this through the County Board of Supervisors and with the media already for the last several years, is we need to start paying our people competitive pay and benefits so that we can retain the current talented staff that we have at the sheriff's office. That's step number one. Once we do that, I'm certain that that will increase our recruitment as well. And once we do those two things, then we'll start backfilling our staffing. But in the meantime, one of the plans that I've come up with that we've implemented already to try to deal with the staffing without the money side of things, because the money is controlled by the Board of Supervisors, is I've created an internal promotional opportunity. So our correctional staff is coming to the jail, working for several years, and then we're opening it up to send them to the academy. And then if they pass the test and we send them to the academy, then they become deputy sheriffs, and we're putting them on patrol, which is one of the biggest areas that we're having difficulties filling right now, is our patrol deputies. So it does twofold. It moves our already known qualified commodity that we have working in the jail over to the patrol side of things, and then it has boosted our recruitment in the jail, because people that are coming into the jail see that opportunity that they can come in, work, have good work ethic, do a good job in the jail, and have a potential to come for us to put them through the academy and to go to patrol. So those are the techniques that we're kind of using now. As far as the other things that are coming up, I full-fledged believe that we need to continue with our jail expansion project. We've been working on that for several years, and with Governor Newsom closing down prisons, we need to be capable and able to protect our citizens from the most violent chronic offenders that we have. And to do so, we have to have the space to make sure that we can keep them in jail. After that, we just need to evolve. I mean, I work for a great sheriff, but the sheriff that I work for doesn't necessarily believe in technology. He's kind of an old school guy, and I think that there's a place in law enforcement nowadays that makes things more efficient and effective with the use of technology, helps us investigate certain types of crimes that we may not be able to solve without that technology. And so I want to implement things like that, add in social media aspects that we don't have now, for multiple reasons, to promote the positive things that law enforcement does, our sheriff's office, to hold ourselves accountable and transparent for things that we may do that's not, that could be questionable at some points. But more so, probably the biggest reason is a lot of us turn to social media when there's some type of emergency going on and get their information readily available from social media. And we want to be able to put out that accurate information to the media when we have a wildland fire or flood or something that affects them. On top of that, I think the biggest area of concern, and you've probably seen it in the media lately, is our outlying areas. I'm a resident in Mineral. Originally, when I was a youngster, It's a 90-person community, and we had a resident deputy, and it's highly ineffective and inefficient. When they're off, they're off. You can't expect them to go out on, you know, violent crimes or whatever by themselves. My intent is, once we can get our staffing right, I want to create a rural area deputy or deputies where their focus is those rural communities and not the main thoroughfare, not Red Bluff, Corning, those areas where we typically see a lot of our law enforcement activity, but to provide services to people who pay taxes out in the rural areas like Mineral, Manton, Lake California, Cottonwood, Pascana, Capay, those areas, and they can actually have someone that they can directly have communication with. So when they're having a problem house or a problem person or speeding traffic, they can call a deputy, and that deputy can choose to work in those communities on certain days so that they can effectively target what's going on. In the same time, that doesn't reduce our manpower to respond to other calls, and it also allows us to add additional manpower to that if there's a need at some point in the future. Without a long response time like we're seeing in some of the areas right now.
Okay. And now we do have a caller. We have Ron on the line. Good morning, Ron. Did you have a question or a comment for our candidate here?
Kind of both. I have a real problem with having to register our weapons. I don't see any reason to do that, because once they're registered, that means anybody can find out who has it, and they want to disarm us, and this is what happened to the to people in Australia. Their weapons were registered, and the government went in and took them, and it didn't work out very well for the Jews, and the Nazi Party went in and did the same thing. So I don't see why they have to be registered. The criminals don't register their guns, obviously. And another thing, I don't see why we have to be limited to carrying a sidearm to defend ourselves. I think it should also be a long gun. A friend of mine has a Mexican drug cartel. It's near her place. The dogs come up and they kill her sheep, and she took a couple shots at them, and the sidearm wasn't adequate to take care of the situation, so she should have been able to have a long gun. So if that's the case, if you allow people to carry a open carry or something, would you also be considering allowing people to have a long gun to help to defend themselves? So anyhow, that's kind of my question. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Ron.
Yeah, so the easy answer to that is we're confined by the law. I understand your concern about the registration issues, but the registration issues is not a sheriff's office issue. I will address this, though, as a question was asked of me yesterday about this. As a sheriff, I have absolutely no interest in seeking out anyone's lawfully obtained Second Amendment weapons that they hold. So the sheriff also has more constitutional power in a county than the governor does, and I have no intention on working with the federal government or the state government in order to go out and take anyone's firearms if that's something that they're interested in doing, first and foremost. Secondly, in your addressing of the rifle situation of animals going after livestock, especially if it's your own property, you absolutely have the right to carry a long gun. You absolutely have the right to utilize that long gun to protect your animals and yourself. And I've been in that situation before, as I owned a small ranch and I had dogs killing my chickens. And so that is a option you can do. As far as open carry and rifles, that's something that I would like to do a little bit more research on. As far as open carry, I support it. I get concerned, maybe it's because I've been a cop for 26 years and I've always carried a concealed firearm, about the tactical implications of having someone being able to see or obtain your firearm. And so those are the issues that I have with it, but I certainly am not opposed at all to open carry. From what I can tell, it's authorized under the law.
Perfect. All right, so you did answer a portion of the next question, but in 2006, on October 29th, Hurricane Katrina struck New Orleans. In the wake of the aftermath, on September 8th, several days after the storm passed, New Orleans officials ordered the confiscation of lawfully owned firearms from city residents. As the Washington Post reported, New Orleans Superintendent P. Edwin Compass made clear no one will be able to be armed and all guns will be taken. If something like that were to be happening, would you not only not participate, but stand up against the people that would try to do any type of confiscation?
Yeah, my understanding, and I'm sure that there'll be a caller here that may agree or disagree with me, but my understanding is we have the Second Amendment to protect ourselves against the government and also to protect ourselves for the First Amendment, our freedom of speech, and to be able to decide how we think things should go. In that particular case, I'm not going to speak about that jurisdiction, but when you're talking specifically about an order to take arms from citizens, I have an oath of office that I've taken multiple times to uphold the Constitution of the state of California and uphold the Constitution of the United States government. And people are entitled to have their firearms under the Second Amendment. There's very few exclusions to that, and I'm sure most people know, but if you are criminally prohibited, then you can't. And if you have mental health issues, then you can't, unless a judge can tell you that you can. Aside from that, and if they can't give me any of those specified preclusions that would prevent them from having those firearms, I would not go seek those firearms unless they're involved in some type of criminal activity.
Okay. And last question that I have is, large capacity magazines defined as magazines that can hold more than 10 rounds of ammunition has been illegal in California to manufacture, import, or keep, or give for sale. However, Attorney General Barra appealed the decision and allowed people to buy them for a period of time,
yes,
staying the ruling even afterwards. So there are many people within our community and within our state that now have these large capacity magazines. If you or one of your deputies got a call that someone was shooting more than 10 rounds at a range or a private property utilizing what the state considers high-capacity magazines, would you confiscate the weapons, firearms, or magazines?
No, and I'll explain to you more so than what you said. Before then, if you looked at the law said prior to a certain date, right,
mm-hmm,
you couldn't import, bring into, furnish, purchase. Right. So we had issues with the law back then. There were many times we've confiscated large capacity magazines, 30, 50, 100 round magazines. And when we did that, it was based on the fact that we identified that they were brought into the state after the law preclusion. However, on the ones that we couldn't determine, there is no seizure. You can't make a seizure because there's no way of knowing when it came in. I think now it opens it up even more with the fact that it was open for a period of time and then closed for a period of time. So my argument would be if, under the circumstance you're talking about, if someone's out of the range target shooting, if they're a legal law-abiding citizen doing something legal, I'm not going to have me or my people seek to seize that. If they're engaged in criminal activity, we're going to take them.
Okay. How about if they're engaged in a lawful shoot or some type of situation like that, would you or your deputies seek to bring any criminal charges against them? Let's say someone had three people come out to their home, and they used a high-capacity magazine in such a thing like an AR-15 to defend their home and property under a lawful shoot.
Absolutely not.
Okay. Now, with that said, we are towards the end of the show. Give us some information on where to find you, what you need, and tell us more about that.
Yeah, perfect. So the best way to get a hold of me is through my cell phone. It's 530-526-3388. It's election season, so I answer it almost any time, day or night. You can also get a hold of me. My email address is kane4sheriff, the number 4. My website is kane4sheriff. And then probably most of the information about some of the things you're asking and even some of the questions that you haven't asked is available on my Facebook page, Dave Kane for Sheriff. One of the things I'd like to point out just before I leave is that one of the things I bring to the table I think that makes me a very viable candidate is some of the endorsements I bring. And one of the endorsements I bring is the Tama County Sheriff's Office Management has endorsed me for sheriff, and I've been endorsed by the Tama County Deputy Sheriff's Association. And most of us know to have a successful organization, to be able to impose the ideas and the plans that you have to have the support of your people, and I have that. Furthermore, I've also been endorsed not just locally, but by the California Statewide Law Enforcement Association, which is a 7,000-member organization statewide. I've been endorsed by PORAC, Peace Officers Research Association of California. I've been endorsed by Sierra Pacific Industries, which is the largest landowner and employer in Tehama County. I've been endorsed by a variety of chiefs, either active or retired, in the Tehama County area, as well as other law enforcement professionals. These are individuals and organizations that have been successful, and they know that I have the ability to do the job.
Okay. And perfect. Thank you very much for coming on. We appreciate the time.
Thank you.
Bob, I'd like to also give you the opportunity. Once again, we have Bob Holsinger, who is in, and he was my awesome co-host today. And how can we find you?
Okay, Bob Holsinger, 35@gmail.com. Or 530-680-0862. Thank you very much. I appreciate your vote on June 7th. Thank you.
Good deal. You guys have been listening to the Sovereign Minds Radio on 96.5 FM, 1460 AM. Stay original, guys, and all gun control is racist. Have a great week.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical